For the Pacific Radio Network and Planet Waves FM, this is The Miracle Hour. My name's Eric Francis Coppolino, broadcasting from Kingston, New York. Today's episode is being recorded on Sunday, the 20th of March, 2016. That is the vernal equinox. Happy spring. Welcome to our program. Today, I have a selection of three lessons grouped on one particular theme, which is the theme of attack and defensiveness. Now, this is one of the central themes of A Course in Miracles, and you will get the flavor of some of the kind of core thinking that is behind what the Course describes as a complete reversal in thinking that is necessary to basically have any peace and happiness in this world. The idea of how pretty much everything we see on the planet is somehow backwards, inside out, upside down, or reversed is made throughout A Course in Miracles. It's something we've noticed many times when we just encounter completely absurd, backward thinking, thinking that would be 100% correct were it reversed 100%, but the backward version is accepted as gospel truth. Well, this is the hopeless situation that A Course in Miracles is attempting to reach into and find a few of us who are willing to at least experiment with a different kind of reasoning. An experiment it is. I think not that much more is asked, although the Course does make one statement at some point that I have taken to heart, which is you cannot be fully committed part of the time. It is full of all these little metaphysical witticisms that are often true enough. I want to begin, though, with a little bit of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, acknowledging ongoing my skepticism with religion and anything that drops the name of Jesus, the Christ, the Holy Spirit, or God. I think we all have good reasons to be skeptical of this. There's a fabulous song by Graham Nash called Cathedral, written sometime, I guess, in the 60s or 70s, and he's got a Sunday free, and he drives across the countryside of England, probably tripping from the lyrics, and he goes to Winchester Cathedral somewhere, and he realizes how many people have died in the name of Christ, and how is it possible that anyone could heed the call? But the question is, what is the call? Is it a call to arms, or is it a call to peace? And anything that is a call to arms and said to be in the name of God is very likely to be completely false. It's honest enough to say, hello, I'm Walmart, and you're Target, and we will conquer you. All right, that at least is an honest statement. But if we were to say, hello, I am a representative of the Pleiadians, and I happen to live at Walmart, and in the name of truth and justice, we're going to conquer Target, that's a different statement. So I remain alert to things that are offered in the name of religion that are kind of crazy. And I would evaluate what I'm reading, and I'm doing so on the basis not of whether it has religious jargon in it, but rather what is the bottom line? What is the action being proposed, and what is the motive for that action? So anyway, there's a wonderful book called A Coney Island of the Mind. This is a book that is alive and as fresh as the day that it was written. It's a 1955 work by Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Far as I know, still alive and the poet laureate of San Francisco. And here is what he said to his brothers and sisters in the mid-1950s, when the Beat Generation writers were just getting cooking. This is poem 5 from Ekoni Island of the Mind. Sometime during eternity, some guys show up, and one of them who shows up real late is a kind of carpenter from some square-type place like Galilee. And he starts wailing and claiming he is hip to who made heaven and earth, and that the cat that really laid it on us is his dad. And moreover, he adds, it's all writ down in some scroll-type parchments, which some henchmen leave laying around the Dead Sea somewheres a long time ago, and which you won't even find for a couple of thousand years or so, or at least for 1947 of them to be exact, and even then, nobody really believes them, or me, for that matter. You're hot, they tell him, and they cool him. They stretch him on a tree to cool, and everybody after that is always making models of this tree with him hung up, and always crooning his name and calling him to come down and sit in on their combo as if he is the king cat who's got to blow or they can't quite make it, only he don't come down from his tree, him just hang there on his tree looking real petered out and real cool. And also, according to a roundup of the late world news from the usual unreliable sources, real dead. This is a complicated poem. You have to parse through to figure out where the poet is coming from. I think that he is objecting to the use, the use of this, but he's skeptical of the dude who comes around and says that his dad made heaven and earth. Now, we don't know if there was a Jesus or what he actually said. But I will say that the kind of thing being described in Poem 5, Ekoni Island of the Mind, is different from the thing being described in A Course in Miracles. This is the version of the Christ who is not real dead. This is the living Christ. And as I say that, I'm reminded that I drive past billboards on the highway that say, come and find the living gospel at our church. And I haven't gone to any of those places to find out if they're teaching the living gospel or if they're just going to be laying a trip on me for liking to eat pussy. I mean, what's the bottom line here? And Lawrence Ferlinghetti, by the way, is all about getting naked and getting it on. There's a fantastic poem I had read previously and just rediscovered again today about this scene one day in San Francisco where they're putting up a statue of St. Francis in the city of St. Francis in front of some Franciscan monastery or church, and there's no birds, and Francis has his arms outstretched, but there's no bird singing, and Francis is all about the critters and the birds. He preached to the birds. And while all these news journalists are there and some priest is making statements and there's no birds and St. Francis is being hoisted up onto the church, there's this naked woman roaming around the crowd. It was hipster times in San Francisco, and she's naked and she's only wearing her bird's nest. That is how Lawrence, who I love, puts it. And so he's always about the irony of the contrast between the dead version of spirituality and the living version of spirituality. So we're going to find some things in these three lessons. I've got three lessons selected that, you know, may seem controversial because, first of all, they contradict the thinking of the world, but they also contradict some of the things we take as necessary steps toward healing in our times, right? And so let's cross those bridges when we come to them. The theme of these three lessons, again, is attack and defensiveness. And the three lessons are lesson 26, My attack thoughts are attacking my invulnerability. So you get this one about 3 weeks in. Then there's lesson 135, a very famous lesson. If I defend myself, I am attacked. It's a long one, too. Maybe the longest lesson. Lesson 153, in my defenselessness, my safety lies. So let's read the first one here. And remembering this is way at the beginning, lesson 26, right? People are just getting going and, you know, maybe started the first 10 lessons three times. And anyway, finally on a roll and get all the way up to lesson 26. And you arrive at, you wake up and you open the book and, or you check your email and you read the statement, my attack thoughts are attacking my invulnerability. And the lesson begins, it is surely obvious that if you can be attacked, you are not invulnerable. You see attack as a real threat. That's because you believe that you can really attack. And what would have effects through you must also have effects on you. Central concept of healing, by the way. What would have effects through you must also have effects on you. It is this law that will ultimately save you, but you're misusing it now. You must therefore learn how it can be used for your own best interests rather than against them. Because your attack thoughts will be projected, you will fear attack. And if you fear attack, you must believe that you're not invulnerable. Attack thoughts therefore make you vulnerable in your own mind, which is where the attack thoughts are. Attack thoughts and invulnerability cannot be accepted together. They contradict each other. The idea for today introduces the thought that you always attack yourself first. If attack thoughts must entail the belief that you are vulnerable, their effect is to weaken you in your own eyes. Thus, they have attacked your perception of yourself. And because you believe in them, you can no longer believe in yourself. A false image of yourself has come to take the place of what you are. Practice with today's idea will help you understand that vulnerability or invulnerability is the result of your own thoughts. Nothing except your thoughts can attack you. Nothing except your thoughts can make you think you are vulnerable. And nothing except your thoughts can prove that this is not so. 6 practice periods are required for applying today's idea. A full 2 minutes should be attempted for each of them. Although the time may be reduced to a minute, if the discomfort is too great, do not reduce it further. And then there are further instructions. The practice period should begin with repeating the idea for today, then closing your eyes and reviewing the unresolved questions whose outcomes are causing you concern. The concern may take the form of depression, worry, anger, a sense of imposition, fear, foreboding, or preoccupation. Any problem, as yet unsettled, that tends to recur in your thoughts during the day is a suitable subject. You will not be able to use very many for any one practice period because a longer time than usual should be spent on each one. Today's idea should be applied as follows. First, name the situation. I am concerned about whatever. Then go over every possible outcome that has occurred to you in that connection and which has caused you concern, referring to each one quite specifically, saying, I'm afraid blank will happen. So you name a situation and then you think of a whole bunch of horrible things that could go wrong as a result of that. And then you say, I'm afraid blank will happen, and state the fear out loud, articulately. This alone is helpful because it's getting your thoughts, you know, above the line of liminality. This is a helpful technique. If you're doing the exercises properly, you should have some 5 or 6 distressing possibilities available for each situation that you use, and quite possibly more. It's much more helpful to cover a few situations thoroughly than to touch on a larger number. As the list of anticipated outcomes for each situation continues, you'll probably find some of them, especially that occur to you toward the end, less acceptable to you. However, treat them all alike to whatever extent you can. After you've named each outcome of which you yourself are afraid, tell yourself, that thought is an attack upon myself. Conclude each practice period by repeating today's idea to yourself once more. All right, so the interesting, right? So I think that there's one idea here that needs a little bit of unpacking. And let's see if we can find this. All right. Practice with today's idea will help you understand that vulnerability or invulnerability is the result of your own thoughts. Nothing except your thoughts can attack you. Nothing except your thoughts can make you think you're vulnerable, and nothing except your own thoughts can prove that this is not so. So obviously you can say, well, if nothing except my thoughts can attack me, how can that, you know, is that person who breaks into my house and stabs me 50 times a result of my own thoughts? Well, that is a thought, and we don't really meet anybody who that happens to, or if we do, it's extremely rare. Most of what attack us, or, you know, most of the whole attack defense thing is going on within our own minds. Very little of it actually happens in the world, and it would seem that the people in situations that we're most concerned about either are not really thinking much about us, or completely removed and abstract from us. So while it is true that, you know, it is possible to go across the street for a slice of pizza and get hit by a car, if we just stick with the part of this whole thing that is in fact in our own minds and test that part of the theory. No one's asking you to, you know, go down to the mass murder district and see what happens down there. This is more about the concerns that happen every day and the things that we're worried about, and, you know, what is this person going to do, and what did my boyfriend do, and all of this, and give that a whirl. It does seem to be true that most of what we are attacked by are our own thoughts. And as these lessons progress a bit, there's two more that I've selected. In a fairly well-known little grouping of lessons, two core students, they're related, and they build on a theme. And one of the things the course does is work with these themes throughout the year, throughout the 365 lessons, and bring them up in a new form with some understanding of the place that the student is at. However, this theme of defensiveness and attack thoughts is completely central to the whole project of A Course in Miracles. So let's just go back and read the first paragraph again, and then we will dissolve into a bit of music from Vision Quest. All right. My attack thoughts are attacking my invulnerability. It is surely obvious that if you can be attacked, you're not invulnerable. You see attack as a real threat. That is because you believe that you can really attack. And what would have effects through you must have effects on you. It is this law that will ultimately save you, but you're misusing it now. You must therefore learn how it can be used for your own best interests rather than against them. This music is from the Vision Quest sessions the week of the total solar eclipse in Pisces. Here you go. listening to the Miracle Hour from Pacific Radio Network and planetwaves.fm. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, speaking to you today on the vernal equinox, northern hemisphere vernal equinox, little stretch of time where day and night are equal. Day becomes longer. We come to one of those turning points in the year. If you are one of those people who likes to hang out in the natural world. All right, let's go to the second lesson. And by the way, today we're talking about the whole idea of defenses and defenselessness and what the relationship is and how it is that much of what we struggle with and fear the most is created by our own thoughts. Central theme in A Course in Miracles, the mind training of A Course in Miracles is designed to help you recognize the fact that your thoughts are the thing that you are experiencing the very most and the thing over which you have the most influence as you learn some basic techniques for getting there, though it sometimes seems like these techniques need to be learned over and over again and practiced, and that is why we have training project, and you have me here to kind of ramble on about this. Lesson 135, probably the most famous lesson in A Course in Miracles, except for lessons like nothing I see means anything, I am as God created me, bits like that. Lesson 135, if I defend myself, I am attacked. It says, who would defend himself unless he thought he were attacked? That the attack were real, and that his own defense could save himself. Let's see how that sounds in female pronouns. Who would defend herself unless she thought she were attacked, the attack were real, and that her own defense could save herself? Herein lies the folly of defense. It gives illusions reality and then attempts to handle them as real. It adds illusions to illusions, thus making correction doubly difficult. Unless there's no order of difficulty of miracles. I said that, not Jesus. And it is this you do when you attempt to plan the future, activate the past, or organize the present as you wish. Here's an interesting bit in this lesson. This takes everyone by surprise, I think. If I defend myself, I'm attacked. And then you read the lead of the lesson, and it's saying planning is a problem. Planning is a problem. Let's read that again. Well, I'll keep the female pronouns. Who would defend herself unless she thought she were attacked, that the attack were real, and that her own defense could save herself? Herein lies the folly of defense. It gives illusions full reality and then attempts to handle them as if real. It adds illusions to illusions, thus making correction doubly difficult. And this you do when you attempt to plan the future, activate the past, or organize the present as you wish. You operate from the belief that you must protect yourself from what is happening because it must contain what threatens you. A sense of threat is an acknowledgement of an inherent weakness, a belief that there is danger which has power to call on you and make appropriate defense. The world is based on this insane belief. All of its structures, all of its thoughts and doubts, its penalties and heavy armaments, its legal definitions and codes, its ethics and its leaders and its gods all serve but to preserve the sense of threat. For no one walks in this world in armature but must have terror striking at his heart. Defense is frightening. It stems from fear, increasing fear as each defense is made. You think it offers safety, yet it speaks of fear made real and terror justified. Is it not strange you do not pause to ask, as you elaborate your plans and make your armor thicker and your locks more tight, what you defend and how and against what? Yeah, it's hard to argue with this. There are so many examples that demonstrate it. One of my favorites is the gun thing. You don't need to be a psychologist, but it is fun to talk about it with psychologists. This This thing the NRA advertises on TV about how, like, having more guns makes the world more safe. This is the logic this is going at, really, like, untying, like, a bow. And the no one has failed to see, well, haha, not true. Most of us, whoever we are, have seen the complete fallacy of the logic that all we need is more people with guns and we'll be safer. That logic falls apart the moment it is questioned. And it only would hold up if you were trying to rationalize any guns at all in the world. And so the solution to guns, if you believe in guns, clearly is more guns, obviously. But if you don't believe in guns, you think maybe there's a better approach, then the solution is less guns and less of the thinking that leads to the need for guns. But the idea that the thing that you would defend yourself against with a gun is in your own mind is so transparent. It's so blatantly obvious because that thing that would attack you is not actually there. But you've got a gun, hypothetically, in this situation. The person, hypothetical person, has a gun. And so against that imagined thing, the gun would work. And yet the weapon itself reinforces the thought form, makes it more vivid and seeming more real. That weapon in its reality is relatively real. Pull the trigger and there will be a powerful explosion and a projectile will fly out and could kill anyone or anything. So for us, that's real, and then that reinforces the seeming reality of that which it would defend against. Now, when you add guns to the equation, this seems to be pretty clear. But if we remember that almost all defenses function like that gun on someone's belt, reinforcing the perception that the thing the gun would be used against is real, and then there's kind of a feedback loop, and it just gets worse and worse. And you know, if you're not walking around with a Glock 19 on your belt, you might not think you're that defensive. But what this lesson's getting at is that defenses are slippery, and one of them involves planning. You might think, "Wow, planning! I need to plan things." Obviously, I was sitting this morning over at Ulster Coffee, having printed out these three lessons, and thinking how I was going to get all my work done today. And it's Sunday, and I really do want to go outside. And yet, you know, I'm in publishing. I have editors expecting things all week long, and I really don't like to mess with them or with my publication schedules. And all through my publishing life, I have kind of juggled, well, certainly my publishing life after A Course in Miracles, juggled this concept that planning is a defense. And it's, I have no idea how to balance this one out, because in any event, let me keep reading here. And I say all this recognizing the seeming paradoxes. It always annoys me when spiritual teachers ignore the obvious problems that people face. And I always find it encouraging when spiritual teachers at least say, well, here is a teaching, and I recognize that this challenges some things for you that may seem as necessary as, you know, you feel better if you have breakfast in the morning, and that takes planning. All right. So anyway, let's keep reading and let that contradiction or seeming contradiction stand there. Okay. So let's read this pivotal paragraph again. Defense is frightening. It stems from fear, increasing fear as each defense is made. You think it offers safety, yet it speaks of fear made real and terror justified. Is it not strange that you do not pause to ask as you elaborate your plans and make your armor thicker and your locks more tight, what you defend and how and against what? Let us consider first what you defend. It must be something that is very weak and easily assaulted. It must be something made easy prey, unable to protect itself, and needing your defense. What but the body has such frailty that constant care and watchful deep concern are needful to protect its little life? What but the body falters and must fail to serve the Son of God as worthy host? So we also now have a discourse on the body, which is the thing that would need to eat breakfast. And I maintain I do feel better with a little food in me in the morning. Okay. Yet is it not the body that can fear? Yet is it not the body that can fear nor be a thing of fear? It is not the body that can fear nor be a thing of fear. Read that three times to get that. It has no needs but those which you assign to it. It needs no complicated structures of defense, no health-inducing medicine, and no care and no concern at all. Defend its life, or give it gifts to make it beautiful, or walls to make it safe, and you but say your home is open to the thief of time, corruptible and crumbling, so unsafe it must be guarded with your very life. Is this picture not fearful? Can you be at peace with such a concept of your home? Yet what endowed the body with the right to serve you thus except your own belief? It is your mind which gave the body all the functions that you see in it and set its value far beyond the little pile of dust and water. Who would make defense of something that he recognized as this? It's funny, I don't quite remember this from this lesson, but so we're getting a discourse on the relationship of the mind to the body and a discourse on planning. So one of the central concepts in A Course in Miracles is that the mind can lead the body to a state of health sufficiently that it's not necessary to think much about the body and its state of health as long as the mind is clear and not attacking the body. Perhaps said another way, it's saying that all of the injuries that the body seems to get are basically the result of attack thoughts. The body is in need of no defense. Lesson 135 continues, this cannot be too often emphasized. The body will be strong and healthy if the mind does not abuse it by assigning it to roles it cannot fill, to purposes beyond its scope, and to extend the aims which it cannot accomplish. Such attempts, ridiculous yet deeply cherished, are the sources of many mad attacks you make upon it. For it seems to fail your hopes, your needs, your values, and your dreams. The self that needs protection is not real. The body, valueless and hardly worth the least defense, need merely be perceived as quite apart from you, and it becomes a healthy, serviceable instrument through which the mind can operate until its usefulness is over. Who would want to keep it when its usefulness is done? Defend the body, and you have attacked your mind, for you have seen in it the faults, the weaknesses, the limits, and the lacks from which you think the body must be saved. You will not see the mind as separate from bodily conditions, and you will impose upon the body all the pain that comes from the conception of the mind as limited and fragile and apart from other minds and separate from its source. These are the thoughts that need healing, and the body will respond with health when they have been corrected and replaced with truth. This is the body's only real defense. Yet is this where you look for its defense? You offer it protection of a kind from which it gains no benefit at all, but merely adds to your distress of mind. You do not heal, but merely take away the hope of healing, for you fail to see where hope must lie if it be meaningful. A healed mind does not plan. It carries out the plans it receives through listening to wisdom that is not its own. It waits until it has been taught what should be done, then it proceeds to do so. And it does not depend upon itself for anything except its adequacy to fulfill the plans assigned to it. It is secure in certainty that obstacles cannot impede its progress to accomplishment of any goal that serves the greater plan established for the good of everyone. A healed mind is relieved of the need that it must plan, although it cannot know the outcome which is best, the means by which it is achieved, nor how to recognize the problem that the plan is made to solve. It must misuse the body in its plans until it recognizes that this is so. But when it has accepted this is true, it is healed and lets the body go. Read one more paragraph. Then I have a short thought. Enslavement of the body to the plans of the unhealed mind sets up to save it. Enslavement of the body to the plans the unhealed mind sets up to save itself must make the body sick. It is not free to be the means of helping in a plan which far exceeds its own protection and which needs its service for a little while. In this capacity, health is assured, for everything the mind employs for this will function flawlessly and with the strength that has been given it cannot fail. It is perhaps not easy to perceive that self-initiated plans are defenses with the purpose all of them were made to realize. They are the means by which a frightened mind would undertake its own protection at the cost of truth. This is not difficult to realize in some forms which these self-deceptions take, where the denial of reality is very obvious, yet planning is not often recognized as a defense. Pretty amazing. I would just offer the reminder, before we break for a bit more music, that a course in miracles is not a course in enlightenment or a course in... what else? There are many goals that come along with various spiritual paths. Purity, enlightenment, being a better person, being powerful. All those are on a bit different wavelength or vastly different wavelength. The Course in Miracles is intended for... The hardest jobs, the very most difficult, and once that level of awareness is even experienced, which usually happens pretty quickly in the process of doing this work, then it becomes clear that there's no order of difficulty of miracles. But that's what we're talking about, right? We're not talking about enlightenment here. I think that's helpful to recognize that. We're talking about tools that are intended to work for the the scenes that really seem impossible. Let's listen to a little bit of music, and I'm going to ponder that for a second. To the Miracle Hour. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino. Today we are talking about defenses and defenselessness. And I've introduced the concept of attack thoughts, basically one of two forms of thought. And in the early lessons, I think somewhere before lesson 26, which we started with, the course introduces the concept of attack thoughts. And basically, that would include most thoughts, it would seem, except the, things that we genuinely recognize as loving extensions of our loving mind. And among those attack thoughts are planning. This is, I didn't remember that exactly. I've long remembered the bit about planning. As part of that, I went for most of the last 20 years without using a date book. My concept was that if I couldn't remember what I had to do, then I shouldn't do it. And I could pretty easily memorize my publishing schedule. When it comes down to meetings and managing a lot of clients, at a certain point last year, I gave in and got a date book and started writing things down, and that did help. So I've experimented with some of this in some strange ways. Okay, let's look at lesson 153 in the time remaining. Goes pretty quickly. In my defenselessness, my safety lies. You who feel threatened by this changing world, its twists of fortune and its bitter jests, its brief relationships, and all the, quote, gifts, unquote, it merely lends to take away again, attend this lesson well. The world provides no safety. It is rooted in attack, and all of its gifts are of seeming safety are illusory deceptions. It attacks and then attacks again. No peace of mind is possible where danger threatens thus. The world gives rise but to defensiveness. For threat brings anger. Anger makes attack seem reasonable, honestly provoked, and righteous in the name of self-defense. Yet is defensiveness a double threat, for it attests to a weakness and sets up a system of defense that cannot work. Now are the weak still further undermined, for there is treachery without and still greater treachery within. The mind is now confused and knows not where to turn to find escape from its imaginings. It is as if a circle held it fast, wherein another circle bound it and another one in that, until escape no longer can be hoped for nor obtained. Attack, defense, defense, attack become circles of the hours and the days that bind the mind in heavy bands of steel with iron overlaid, returning but to start again. There seems to be no break nor ending in the ever-tightening grip of the imprisonment of the mind. All right. Yeah. Okay, so far so good, right? This is not saying like some dude walked on water and you better believe him or we're going to kill you. Better believe us that he walked on water. This is like, all right, look at your own mind and look at the world and see how this works. See if this means anything. And we shall continue. Fourth paragraph of this lesson. These are long. These last two, 135 and 153, are famously long. And probably, you know, I've got them printed. I'm going to keep looking at these here. I'm intrigued. I have not read this one for quite a while either. All right. Defenses are the costliest of prices, which the ego would extract. In them lies madness in a form so grim that hope of sanity seems but an idle dream beyond the possible. The sense of threat the world encourages is so much deeper and so far beyond the frenzy and intensity which you can conceive that you have no idea of all the devastation that it has wrought. All right, let's read that one again. Defenses are the costliest of all the prices which the ego would extract. In them lies madness in a form so grim that hope of sanity seems but to be an idle dream beyond the possible. The sense of threat the world encourages is so much deeper and so far beyond the frenzy and intensity of which you can conceive that you have no idea of all the devastation it has wrought. There's a fantastic verse from a Grateful Dead song called Throwing Stones. There's a fear down here we can't forget. It hasn't got a name just yet. It's always awake, always around, singing ashes, ashes, all fall down. So the implication here is that there is this fear, this primal fear where we are, and that the problems this has caused for existence on our benighted little world are beyond what we can even conceive. But I think that there's a good few people, I'm sure even listening, who understand that fear is driving pretty much everything. And that people who are the most driven by fear are doing the most driving. I think that among the presidential candidates, only Bernie Sanders is not waging a campaign that is based on some form of fear. The Donald is going to put up a big wall, and everyone else is going to, in some way, protect us from ISIS and terrorists. And it's difficult to be taken seriously as a politician, if you do not in some way come forward and offer some concept of how real the threat is and how defensive we're going to be about that threat. And so much of public discourse is based on all of this. So lesson 153 continues, and I'll leave it on a slightly upper beat. I mean, it keeps describing like how messed up this is, and it's pretty convincing in that it at least makes me want to think that there must be a better way. Defensiveness is weakness. It proclaims you have denied the Christ and come to fear his Father's anger. What can save you now from your delusion of an angry God whose fearful image of you must believe you see at work in all the evils of the world? What but illusions could defend you now, when it is but illusions that you fight? ? We will not play such childish games today, for our true purpose is to save the world, and we would not exchange for foolishness the endless joy our function offers us. We would not let our happiness slip by, a fragment of a senseless dream that happened across our minds when we mistook the figures in it for the children of God, and its tiny instant for eternity. We will look past dreams today and recognize that we need no defenses because we are created unassailable without all thought or wish or dream in which attack has any meaning. Now we cannot fear, for we have left all fearful thoughts behind, and in defenselessness we stand secure, serenely certain of our safety now, sure of salvation, sure we will fulfill our chosen purpose as our ministry extends its holy blessing to the world. Something to think about there. These lessons are all linked on the planetwaves.fm version of this page. If you're listening on WOOL Vermont, howdy. If you want the written versions of these to read them, just go to planetwaves.fm. You'll see Miracle Hour version 7 should be right up there. And I began with Ferlinghetti. I would like to leave you with some Ferlinghetti here, recording on the first day of spring. This is poem 7 from A Coney Island of the Mind. What could she say to the fantastic Foolie Bear? And what could she say to Brother? And what could she say to the cat with future feet? And what could she say to Mother? After that time, she lay lush among the lolly flowers on that hot riverbank, where ferns fell away in the broken air of the breath of her lover, and birds went mad and threw themselves from trees to taste still hot upon the ground that spilled sperm seed. Happy spring. I love you dearly. I'll catch you next week. For Pacifica Radio Network and Planet Waves FM, this has been The Miracle Hour. Bye for now.